Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Roped In. I'm your host, John Roper, and today it is just me. I've got no special guests today, so you're stuck with me for the 30 to 45 minutes that I am recording this. On today's episode, I'm going to be talking about the WNBA draft that just happened and my grades for each team. I'm also going to be talking about my NBA playoff predictions. And then finally, my last little segment is a fun little one of the kind of best father-son duos in the kind of big sports that I watch in history. Those are the three segments. I do want to take a little bit of time and apologize. Sorry for missing last week's episode and no heads up on that one. I was at a best friend's wedding and I just did not plan correctly. So I'm going to give a shout out to Derek and Leslie Langford, my best friend from childhood. I was a groomsman at his wedding. It was down in Cedar Key, Florida, an absolutely beautiful town. Had an amazing time there. The name you guys might have heard, the Harvey name, on a few episodes, we got in touch with their family again. So on that note, I also want to give a apology to a special listener. I can't fully remember this, but apparently during my March Madness preview, I guess I got excited with Auburn losing, and that was a no-no on my part. Auburn's a great school, and going forward, Roped In is pro-Auburn. So that special listener, if you're listening to this, I'm very sorry for that episode, and I will correct my mistakes going forward. Another thing that happened down in Florida was connecting with another member of the Harvey family through marriage, either way, a good friend, that is hopefully going to help me one day with the video side of things. Now, when I say hopefully, nothing's on his part. He has offered to do everything. I now need to get out there, get the equipment, do the things I need to do. So all that being said, keep in mind, Roped in the future, I am trying to become a video side of things to be on YouTube and TikTok. I know nothing about TikTok, but I will learn it. I will get it out there. But again, the wedding down in Cedar Key was a great, great fun. And that's what caused me to miss last week's episode. But here we are back again doing my weekly episodes. Again, just to do a recap after all of that, I'm going to be talking about the WNBA draft, the NBA playoffs, and then who I think are the best kind of father-son duos in sports history. So, as always, without further ado, sit back, relax, and let's get right into it. And kicking off today's episode, as I've mentioned, I'm going to be giving my grades of the kind of WNBA draft that just recently happened. So I'm going to be giving my grades and I'm going to be ranking them in order. So I'm not going kind of in order of the picks. I'm going in order of my rankings. So starting it off, I think the team that's walked away with the best draft night and the best score, the LA Sparks, got an A+ in my books. So the Los Angeles Sparks are, you know, they're a really good franchise in WNBA. Now, WNBA has not been around very long. There have not been a lot of teams. So kind of the teams that have been around the longest are the teams that a lot of people know. But LA, they're always good at sports, and the Sparks are no different there. But again, they're in their rebuilding phase, and I think they walked away with some really, really good picks. So they had the number 2 and the number 4 pick in this draft, and they got Cameron Brink out of Stanford and Rekaya Jackson out of Tennessee. Now, I think they needed defensive big help, and Cameron Brink is the best defensive big in the draft class this year. She's going to come in right away. She's going to be productive. Now, where some of the old heads in WNBA are saying is, these college stars that are getting a lot of hype now aren't going to be as good as people think they are. I'm not going to get into all the semantics of the old heads are just jealous, but it's one of the things where these big names are big now, but yes, they're not going to be as dominating as they were in the March Madness games we were watching, but Cameron Brink is still going to be a very, very good player. Rekaya Jackson is the girl out of Tennessee that they picked. Now, where I think this one was a great move. So during the draft, there was debate that the team that was picking third, Chicago, might potentially take Rekaya Jackson or something. And what does LA do? Do they need both Cameron Brink and Camila Cardoso? Luckily that didn't happen, so they got Rekaya Jackson. Now, where Rekaya Jackson makes things very, very versatile for this team is she's a 6'2" forward that can play both ways. But can play kind of both the wing forward and the power forward. So this is going to be really, really big because it now allows Cameron Brink and Rekaya Jackson to be on the same court during either small ball with Rekaya Jackson being the power forward and Cameron Brink being the big, or they go to big ball with Rekaya Jackson going to the small forward, maybe Brink's the power forward and they have another big girl in there. So it's a very versatile pick with Rekaya Jackson and Cameron Brink being the best defensive big that's also pretty good offensively. I think it was a really, really smart move. And then finally, they finished by getting Mackenzie Forbes out of USC. Mackenzie Forbes, I don't know much about her, but I mean, she's got the hometown fan base of USC. USC had a pretty good tournament. She's a good player, but Cameron Brink and Rekaya Jackson are undoubtedly the best 1-2 pick that I've seen in a long time and is what gives LA the A-plus grade. They did not miss on their picks. Secondly, now I am going with Indiana. So I don't think this is going to be a surprise to many. Indiana is the team with that number one pick. They did not mess up. They got Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark is taking over the women's basketball scene right now. And again, when she becomes into the pros, I think it's going to be a bit of a, not awakening, I think she expects it, but she's going to be around people that could compete like her. And the WNBA is full of talent, so Caitlin Clark's not going to do what she did in NCAA. However, it's clear that Indiana is going to be building around her and Aaliyah Boston. One of the things that the Indiana coach said is, we're not going to try and change the way Caitlin Clark plays. Caitlin Clark is amazing because of who she is. So it's going to be interesting to see if Indiana builds around her or if they kind of treat it as, you're a rookie, you've got to prove it, we got to figure out how this works. I think it's going to be a mix of the two, but Indiana did not mess up because they got a generational talent in Caitlin Clark. Maybe generational is an exaggeration, but she's a huge ticket. She's already sold a lot of jerseys. They're followers. They've gotten attendance. They have a game against a team that they had to change the stadium because they need more seats. Like, she's a box ticket seller, so getting her was a huge thing. The third team was Dallas Wings. So Dallas Wings are the third team that get an A grade in my books, and they are the A minus. So they had the 5th and the 9th pick. They definitely needed guards, and they went out and they got guards. So they got 3 picks overall. All 3 of them were guards. That 5th pick was Jace Sheldon. She's a phenomenal guard. I think she's probably one of the better or true point guards in this draft class in terms of just leading a team, getting the passing, facilitating the offense. And then they got the 9th pick late. I cannot remember her first name, but she's the 19-year-old French woman. France seems to be putting out some dominant prospects in Wembanyama on the men's side this year. The number one pick is projected to be Alexandre Sarr, who's another 7'2" Frenchman. On the women's side, you're about to hear me mention a couple of different ones, and this is the first one. So a 19-year-old, she's got the talent. From France, she didn't play in the NCAA. She's part of the EuroLeague, so that's going to determine if she's going to be able to play right away because she's got commitments to her current Euro team. But the fact that they needed their guards and they went out and I think they got all the guards they needed. Owusu was their draft pick in the 3rd round, and at times she looked like she was the best shooting guard in the country, so that's great value for a 3rd round pick. So Dallas Wings gets A-. Now we're moving on to Minnesota. So Minnesota, I think, had the 4th best draft, and they have a B-plus grade in my books. So granted, the only main one that I know that Minnesota walked away with was Alyssa Pilley. If I'm correct, she came out of Utah State. She's a dominant big woman. Now, it's going to be seen to say who she can defend or which position she's going to defend. However, she's kind of one of those big diesel kind of people that who's going to defend her as well. So it's going to be a matchup nightmare. But then again, she's got to figure out the defense to really be an absolute knockout of a pick. But I'm putting Minnesota up here because they actually made a trade with Chicago. So I'll get into this when it's coming to Chicago's turn. But Chicago basically swapped 7 for 8. They got rid of a 2025 second and a 2026 first round swap. So Minnesota moved back 1. Picked up a 2nd round and has a swap opportunity in 2026 to still get a big that they probably would have gotten. It would have been between her or Angel Reese. Personally, I like Pilly more. Maybe that's a personality thing. I didn't like the way that certain things Angel Reese was doing. However, I'm going to give her credit. She clearly has the talent to be there. I just didn't necessarily like some of the antics that I was seeing. Not this tournament, but the tournament before where NLCU actually did win. I found they just weren't very good winners. But either way, got to give them the credit where it is. But that's neither here or there. Minnesota, B+. Now I'm moving on, and I've got Seattle as another team with B+. So Seattle, I'm going to say the hometown team for me. I'm living here in Victoria, and Seattle's just the closest team to it. But they got Nika Mule out of UConn. Now, Nika Mule is a boss on defense. She's very, very, very good. Where I think I'm going to give Seattle the B+ is I think it's a steal. I think Nika Mule should have been a first-round pick. I think New York should have picked her, but I'm going to get into that when I get to New York. But Nika Mule is the best defending guard with offensive upside in this draft. That's what Seattle needed. That's what Seattle got. Now, I don't know much of the other Seattle picks, but Nika Mule in the second round, that alone gives you a good grade. Now, moving on to Las Vegas. Now, even as I'm saying this, I'm now going to switch it around, and I'm going to put Las Vegas in that A grade, and I'm going to bump them up to the fourth spot, and I'm going to give Las Vegas actually a minus. Reason why is I actually like the three people they walked out with. So they did not have a first-round pick. They're the defending champions. They did not need a first-round pick. Their roster is loaded. But they got Daisha Fair out of Syracuse. Now, this was huge for Syracuse because she was the first Syracuse prospect to be invited to the first day of drafts. So what that really means is they invite 15 of the top prospects. They're the people that they think are going to go in that first round or early. And they're the people that are going to walk up on stage kind of with their family, get the hugs. You see it in NFL a lot as well. You see it in the NBA. Now we're seeing in WNBA. There was 15 women selected. Daisha Fair was one of them. And it's the first time that Syracuse has had somebody selected for that kind of, I'm not going to say award, but for that kind of recognition. And she, if I'm correct, is actually the third leading scorer in women's history in NCAA. So Las Vegas didn't need another scorer, so that's probably why they're not jumping fully far up on my list as a really top team. But they got her. She's a really, really good player. Then they got Caitlin Martin, who is Caitlin Clark's teammate in Iowa. And finally, they got Kitely out of Virginia Tech, who I thought potentially could have been a first-round pick. So they got three ladies who are all productive role players to join a team that really needed role players because they're defending champs with a super squad that didn't really lose any of their stars. So Las Vegas with the A- grade there. Now I'm going to move on to Chicago. So Chicago, in my books, actually gets a B. So some people are going to think, what the heck? How did they get a B if they got away with Camila Cardoso and Angel Reese, who I think could be a really, really good front court pairing for the future? Reason being, they gave up too much. Again, it's going back to what I was mentioning with Minnesota. So Chicago has been touting Angel Reese for a long time. It was no surprise there. They had the 8th pick. Minnesota had the 7th pick. Everybody knew Minnesota wanted a big. So Chicago got a little bit scared, and they traded their 8th pick for the 7th pick along with their 2025 second round pick and the option to swap picks in 2026 first round. So yes, Angel Reese is a fantastic player. I don't think Angel Reese is that much better than Alyssa Pilley to give up that much, and that's why Chicago only gets a B in my eyes. But they also walked away in the second round with Maxwell, who is one of the best three-point shooters in college basketball this year. So getting Camila Cardoso and Reese to be the front court pairing and a really good three-point shooter, I have to give them their props as well. But they gave up a bit too much in my eyes to get Reese when I think Pilly would have been good. Now that I think about it, Pilly and Cardoso play very similar styles. But again, it's just too much to give up, but still a really, really good draft that you got to be. Now we're moving on in Phoenix Mercury, who is now the home of my future wife, Rebecca Allen. They get a B minus. I don't know many of the players that they drafted. I can't say I scouted them very much, but they got Osborne at the 25th pick, and she could have easily been a first round draft pick. So the fact that they got her that late is why I'm going to give them a B minus on this one. Now we're moving on to New York Liberty, and I'm going to switch my grade on the fly here. I had them as a B minus, but I'm actually going to give them a B. Reason why is they competed with the Las Vegas Aces for last year's championship. They also have a really, really good roster. Sabrina Ionescu, Breonna Stewart, Breonna Taylor. No, not Breonna Taylor. They've got another really big woman. But yes, they've got a really, really good team. So what they desperately needed was defensive help, and they got it in Markeisha Davis. Markeisha Davis is the best defensive guard in this draft. Now, I know I mentioned Nika Mule was the best defensive, but I mentioned she was the best defensive guard with offensive upside. So basically, Markeisha Davis doesn't have the offensive upside Nika Mule did. Because of that, that's why I wanted Nika Mule to go first. I think Nika Mule could have been a pretty good successor to Courtney Vandersloot and learn behind her in New York. Either way, Markeisha Davis athletically is better than Nika Mule. So I think defensively, she fits the need for what they want. And because they already have such a good team, I've got to give them a B for getting the one spot they needed. And they got the best person in the draft for that spot. And it's defensive help. Now I'm going to move on to the bottom three teams. So Washington will get a C+ in my books. They got Aaliyah Edwards in the sixth pick. And I like Aaliyah Edwards. But, I mean, as a Canadian, I'm a bit biased, but is Aaliyah Edwards really going to be a superstar in the league, or is she just going to be a really, really good kind of complimentary piece that needs another, you know, Sabrina Ionescu or Breonna Taylor or one of those kind of players? But because she's a really, really good pick, I still have to say that Washington got a good player, and they're a C+. Now, I couldn't necessarily separate these two. Now, Atlanta and Connecticut are the last two teams, so I'm actually going to put Connecticut Sun a slight step above with the C grade. Now, they got Layla Lacan, who is another French woman, really, really good player with a 10th pick. But again, she plays overseas. She's got that contract. Who's to know when she's going to come over? And they didn't really get much else to fit this team. Now, they're a decent team already, but they're not competing for any championships, and I don't think any of their draft picks are going to help them compete for any draft picks. So that's why I've got them this far down. Now, the other team, Atlanta. So I want to have Atlanta higher, but they only drafted international players, and none of their three draft picks are actually going to play in this upcoming season because of their current commitments to their current contracts overseas. But they got Nadia Pock and Borlase, two Australians. So Nadia Pock was one that I mentioned in a couple of episodes ago in my mock draft. I thought she had one of the best upsides. She's 19 years old. I believe she's 6'1 or 6'2, Australian. And, you know, when you've got that kind of length at that kind of age with kind of that moldability, you have that upside. So the fact that they were able to get Pock, and then I also really like Borlase out of Australia. She's another really good young player. They got her with the 20th pick. So none of their players are going to play this year, which is why I have to have them pretty much at the bottom, because no one in the draft is going to help them next year. But the upside could change this in the future for them. So I'm going to keep them at the C. I don't want to put anybody in the D grade. I don't mind everybody. Everybody got a good person that they needed. But again, Atlanta not having anybody play for them next year is the team that had the worst draft. And again, congrats, LA Sparks. You knocked it out of the park with Cameron Brink and Rekaya Jackson. And a little cherry on the cake right there with Mackenzie Forbes out of USC, just to keep the California fan base happy. But either way, that's my NBA draft grades. Let me know in the comments if you think that... Oh, in the comments on my Instagram page. Let me know if you think I got anything absolutely wrong, what you would have changed, who you thought were steals, if you think I got something just ridiculous. I'll fight you on it, because I know I'm right on my grades. And there you have it. And on deck on today's episode was the NBA playoff predictions. So let's get right into it. When you're listening to this, it's already started. So I'm not going to predict the play-ins because they've already happened. And yes, I'm going to make myself sound like a genius because, guys, guess what? I predicted all four teams. No, realistically, I thought the Warriors would have potentially put up a little bit more of a fight there. But overall, the teams got through that, yes, I thought we were going to get through. I thought Philadelphia and Miami would get through. And then, yes, I actually thought it was going to be LA and Golden State. Just again, I thought Golden State had a really, really good roster with the experience. But yes, we're diving right into the rest of the ones. So let's just go straight to the first round. I don't want to go crazy in depth into all of this, but I'm just going to kind of give my thoughts on what's going to happen and break down each different kind of series. So let's start with the East in the first round. We've got the number one Boston against number eight Miami. I'm a huge Miami Heat fan, but Boston's got this one in five. I watched the game that happened today, today being April 21st. It was game one of the series. Boston had it pretty easily. Now, playoff Jimmy is out. He kind of messed up MCL. He has an MCL issue. Messed that up in the first game of the play-in against Philadelphia. Played through it. Absolute competitor. But had to miss the Chicago game and is going to miss the rest of this playoffs in my eyes. Miami played well without him in that Chicago series. In that Chicago game. Got them to the Boston series. But watching them, I mean, Tatum had a triple-double. Porzingis is basically unguardable for anybody on Miami. Bam Adebayo is the best defensive player, but he's also got about 5 inches on Bam Adebayo, and nobody else, I think, can really keep up with Porzingis. Porzingis, I think, is the key to how far you're going to hear me have Boston going. It pains me to say this. I absolutely hate Boston. F Boston. Give them their credit. They're a good team. They're going to beat Miami in five. I think Spoelstra is too good of a coach. He's going to do something. Miami's a grit and grind team. They're going to do something to get one of those games in Miami. But overall, I think Boston's too good of a team. And without playoff Jimmy, I don't think Miami has that kind of go-to leader, the go-to person to win the clutch games against Boston that they need. So, again, Boston in five. Moving down the order, we've got the number four and five. So it's Cleveland and Orlando. I've got Orlando winning that one, and I've got Orlando winning it in seven. So Cleveland's the four seed and Orlando's the five. This is a bit of an upset to me. Now, I could see this one going either way. They're both close teams. Cleveland has a bit more playoff experience being here last year, and Orlando is, I think, surprising a couple of people with how good they were this year. I'm not going to say it surprises me. If you guys remember back to the very, very first episode of Roped In, I was ranking who I thought were kind of some of the top young cores in the league. Orlando was in my top five. Now I'm not going to say I thought they were going to be a fifth seed, but I knew that they had talent on their team, and it's no surprise that I think Paolo Banchero is a criminally underseen person. I don't know how to say it. The media does not give enough recognition to Paolo Banchero. They've got a good bigs. They've got good guards. I absolutely love Jonathan Isaac when healthy. So because of that, I think Orlando in seven. The next series is the number three Milwaukee and the number six Indiana. I've got Indiana winning that one in five. I think Indiana could probably actually even sweep this one, but you've got Dame and Giannis. They're too good. They're going to be able to win one. But I do not have faith in Milwaukee. Now, I wanted Milwaukee to be good because in my eyes, they have the names on paper to be able to dethrone Boston. But Giannis and Dame just have not seemed to figure out how to play well enough together this year. And I never liked the signing of Doc Rivers. I don't want to knock Doc Rivers, but I mean, he won a championship with Boston, yes, but he only won one, and they had a really, really good team there. He went to the Lob City, LA, and he wasn't even able to get them to a finals. I don't even think he was able to get them to to winning an Eastern Conference Finals. They consistently fell short. Lob City, by the way, was the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan era, J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford, super fun team. That LA Clippers was one of the funnest teams in my memory to watch. And Doc Rivers couldn't win with him. So when he went to Milwaukee, it was another one. I did not think he could win with Milwaukee, especially on that short time. I mean, it's kind of proven me right, and I think Indiana is going to kind of easily get by them. Indiana was the team that competed with LA in the play-in tournament. Not the play-in tournament, in that mid-season tournament, which some people have their thoughts on. But Indiana's a really, really good offensive team. It's just whether they're going to be able to put it together defensively and keep it together, because they don't have the playoff experience that the Milwaukee players do. But I just think that Milwaukee team is in shambles. Who knows what's going to happen with them in the offseason. The final first round series in the East is New York Knicks and Philadelphia. I've got New York taking this in six. Now, Joel Embiid, I think, coming back healthy, he's got to continue to test it. I think he's good enough, and Philadelphia is good enough to be able to make this a series. But that New York team, man, I don't want to put anything past them. This year is a really, really good year for them. Jalen Brunson's a fantastic point guard. They've got the defense that they need. So it's there, but again, you can't put it past Joel Embiid. He's going to win one, if not two, off his talent alone. So I've got New York winning that in six. Now let's flip over to the West, where we've got number one OKC against number two New Orleans Pelicans. Initially, I wanted to say OKC in five. However, I remembered that New Orleans is used to playing without Zion. So Zion is their star that had an amazing first game in that play-in tournament, but he also got injured like Jimmy Butler and is probably going to miss the playoffs. So I wanted to say OKC was going to get by that one pretty easily, but New Orleans is used to playing without Zion Williamson. I mean, I think in the entirety of his career in the NBA, he's played in less than 50% of the games. So New Orleans knows how to play without him. You're still missing your star, so New Orleans isn't going to do much. OKC's got a bit of inexperience, but they've got too good of a team. They're going to win in six. Los Angeles Clippers versus the Dallas Mavericks. So that's the four versus five series. I've got the Clippers winning that in six. Now, I want Dallas to win this one. I actually really like the Luka and Kyrie pairing. I think that's working really well for Dallas. I just don't think Dallas has the defensive ability to stop really any team, let alone this high power team with LA. And LA with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard potentially coming back healthy, but definitely Paul George out there. It's scary what they can do defensively, and they're really one of the hotter teams in basketball as of late. So I think they're gonna beat Dallas. I could see this one being in five, but I'm gonna put it in six because Luka and Kyrie are too good. Dallas is also having a really good end of their season. That they will figure it out, but I think LA's defense and offensive firepower is going to help them win it in six. Minnesota and Phoenix, so that's the, if I'm correct, the three versus six seeds. I've got Minnesota in six. Shocker, another 6-1 out in the West. Phoenix has a really, really good team. I just don't think they've got the cohesive ability on the bench. You know, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Devin Booker, really, really good players. They've got the stars out there, but when those players go out, I don't think they've built around them well enough for the role core players to come in. And Minnesota's just too fun. They've got the defense that's there. I mean, Rudy Gobert, Karl-Anthony Towns. I really like McDaniels and his length and his defense. You know, they're one of the taller teams out there as well, so they could compete with Denver. But Minnesota is just, they're fun to watch. They're good to watch. I love Anthony Edwards. He's my favorite player in the NBA right now, and I think he's going to be the face of the league in a few years. He's just super fun. Minnesota's not a great market for basketball, so if you haven't seen many things, I really suggest going out and watching Anthony Edwards' highlights. He is the future of the NBA. And the final series out West would be Denver and Lakers. So I think Denver's going to win that one in five. Lakers have LeBron. They have Anthony Davis. They're a good team, but Denver, for every reason they won last year, is going to have another route this year. Denver is just, in my eyes, went healthy, way too good with that Murray and Jokic pairing. Michael Porter Jr., when he wants to hit shots, Aaron Gordon. They're a good team. They're tough to match up against, and I think they're going to easily get by Lakers. They swept them last year. I don't think they're going to sweep them this year, but I think they're going to do it in five. Brings me on to the second round. So in my predictions, I'm now going to have Boston versus Orlando, a 1-5 seed. I got Boston taking that 1-6. So again, Boston's a really good team. I like Orlando. I could even see this one being five, mainly because of Orlando's inexperience in the playoffs. But I think they've got a good enough team. They can make it a series that Boston's going to win that 1-6. Again, it's just the Tatum Porzingis. They're too much to stop, and I don't think that Magic are going to have the answer for it. Now, as I said, I think Isaac, when healthy, is one of the few people that can match up against Tatum. But who are they going to get to match up against everybody else on Boston? So it's going to be a tough one. Final one in the East would be Indiana versus the Knicks. So that would be the 2-6 seed. And in this one, I'm actually going to have Indiana winning. So I have Indiana doing another upset. Indiana wins that one in 7. And I could actually see this one being my favorite series of the playoffs. Obviously, Miami's playing, so that's my favorite series, but they're going to lose. So Indiana is going to take New York to 7, and I think that one's going to be back and forth. It's going to be a tough series, grit and grind. Both teams are going to be really, really good, but it's Indiana's offense that I think is going to give them the edge, and they're going to win it in 7. Then we move out to the West, where we've got OKC going against the Clippers, the 1-4. I'm going to have the Clippers winning that one in 6. I love OKC. I love the rebuild they're on. I love what they've put together. But again, the same reasons that I have the Clippers beating Dallas are the same reasons I'm going to have them beating OKC. They're too good defensively, too good offensively, playing super well right now. Add in the fact that OKC, this team, as good as they are, does not have the playoff experience to match a team and a roster like the Clippers. So the Clippers are going to win that 1-6. Minnesota versus Denver is going to be another super, super fun one. And I've got Denver winning that 1-7. That's going to rival the Indiana-New York for the best series this playoffs. Mark it here. Actually, you know what? That's going to be the best series this playoffs because of Anthony Edwards and Nikola Jokic. So the length of Denver is what I think really gives them. They're a move-it-around team. Last year, their length really kind of helped them run through. Yes, with their skill. But I think it was that length factor that helped them run through the entire playoffs. And it's going to help them this year. But Minnesota is also a lanky team. Again, they've got Daniels, Towns, and Gobert who can all be out there, who are all 6'10 plus, who are decent enough defensively in terms of matchups that they can compete against Denver. It's just, again, when I cut it back to, it's Jokic is too damn good. If that pick and roll with Murray is the healthy that it can be, Denver is not being beaten. That's a bit of a spoiler, so for later on, you're going to see who's going to win my championship. But Minnesota's going to push them far. I love Anthony Edwards. He's going to make a big statement this playoffs and make people want to watch Minnesota next year. So this one goes to 7, and I've got Denver winning it. Now we're moving on to the conference finals, where in my predictions, we've got Boston going against Indiana. So the Pacers moving their way up from a 6th seed are doing some work here. Boston beats them in 6. Indiana, I don't think, is defensively good enough. Now, I also don't think that Boston's defensively good enough. One of the things I have on as a knock on Boston is if it's a close game late, it's anybody's game. Boston should win, but it's going to be anybody's game. Again, it's as I've said every round, Tatum, Porzingis, even Brown when he's on, Derek White. They got Hauser today who dropped a million threes. They've just got too many players. I think the starting five of Boston is the best starting five, and it's what's going to help them get to the finals. So I've got them beating Indiana in 6. Now we're moving out to the West, where we're going to have the Clippers against Denver. Denver wins this 1-6. I think this one's going to be easier for Denver than it was again the Minnesota series, mainly because this LA team is, as much as I've given them their props, they're also injury prone. Kawhi, Paul George, Russell, they've all had their injuries that I think when you get to this late on in a season in a playoffs, they're going to wear down a little bit. And Denver is just kind of in their golden era right now, and they're going to beat the Clippers in 6. So I think both are going to be in 6. I just think Denver and Boston are too good of teams. The two teams that, I mean, before the season, I would have said they would have been here, and they haven't changed my doubts in what I've seen. So they move on. Now we go to the finals, where it's going to be a good series, but I've got Denver in 6. This one I'm going to put to, again, where I knocked on Boston last round. I think Denver is that one team that's really, really good. It's able to match up with the talent that Boston has. I think Denver's starting five is the second best behind Boston's starting five. So when you make it those close games, Boston has shown in the previous playoffs that they just cannot get it done in close games in it. I mock one of my friends all the time, Miami in seven. Miami's done it. I think two out of the past five playoffs, Miami had no right doing it, but Miami beat Boston in seven. You know, Boston has a doubt of choking in those late games in the playoffs. That's kind of my knock on Tatum. I want to say Tatum's a top five, if not top 10 player, but until he can really prove it in the playoffs, he's just top 15 to me. So Denver is going to be a back-to-back champion, ladies and gentlemen. They are going to win the finals in six games. That Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, if they stay healthy, that pick and roll is too good. Aaron Gordon, MPJ, they've got too much on that team to stop. And for all of that, Denver is the champions of this year's NBA season. And finally, the third and final segment of the day. So this one, I'm going to be honest, is just more of a kind of fun segment that I wanted to kind of just briefly look into. So I'm not going to spend a crazy amount of time on this. It might be one that I bring back with some guests and kind of put some debates on this to see if people think differently. But NFL Draft is this coming Thursday, and the top wide receiver off the board in everybody's eyes is going to be Marvin Harrison Jr. out of Ohio State. Football fans will recognize the name. His father, Marvin Harrison Sr., was a wide receiver for the Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning that developed one of the best QB wide receiver pairings of all time. So yes, his son, Marvin Harrison Jr., top five pick. I think he's going to go number four to Arizona. I don't think they move around. They probably keep Kyler because his contract is too poopy to move. And they get him help. If he doesn't, he's going to go to LA at five. Because there is a lot of talks of teams trading up and getting JJ McCarthy. You know what? I'm not getting the NFL mock draft. I've already done that on a previous episode. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a fantastic player. And I think that Marvin Harrison and Marvin Harrison Jr. can go down as arguably the best father-son duo in NFL history. If Marvin Harrison Jr. has the career that everyone thinks he can have. So I don't want to get into this segment of spitting off facts and everything. You can look on ESPN. You can get into those things. But I'm just kind of going to be mentioning names just because sports fans are going to recognize the names, and those that don't know the names, you can look it up and find out and figure out how much of a genius I actually am on this. So sticking with the football, because Marvin Harrison Jr. hasn't proven himself, there are kind of two names that jumped out in my eyes as probably who was the best father-son duos. So Clay Matthews Jr., he was the dominant pass rusher for the Green Bay Packers a couple of years ago. His father was a tremendous football player as well. I didn't know much about his father, but looking into the research, he had a great football career. So they can go down as it, but in my eyes, I've already mentioned one of their names earlier in Peyton Manning, it's the Mannings. So Archie Manning, more of a kind of college football Hall of Famer. As a matter of fact, he's a college football Hall of Famer, but he also went to two Pro Bowls. And he had two sons, Eli Manning and Peyton Manning, both Super Bowl champions, both Pro Bowlers, both multiple time Super Bowl champions. Actually, Eli Manning is the only quarterback to knock off Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, if I'm correct. Now I hated Eli Manning when he was a Giant because I'm an EAGLES Eagles fan and they play in the same division as the Giants. So I hate everybody that wears the Giants jerseys. But why I kind of had to emphasize the, hey, Tid, I love Eli Manning now that he's retired and he's a media personality. I think he's hilarious. And his brother, Peyton Manning, is, so when he was in his career, everyone was saying, who's better, him or Tom Brady? Now, Tom Brady, I don't want to knock, he is the GOAT, but Peyton Manning, to me, threw a better ball. I personally preferred watching, or I liked Peyton Manning more. So I think the Manning family with Archie Manning, who is an NCAA Hall of Famer, two-time Pro Bowler, has two sons that are multiple-time Super Bowl championships. That Manning family is doing it. Arch Manning is a quarterback out in Texas. He's the nephew of Peyton and Eli. Yes, there is a third brother who did not make it to the NFL. I don't even know what he did, but I'm sure he's not doing too bad in that Manning family. But there's the kind of football side of things. Now, moving on to racing. Max Verstappen is dominating. His father, Jos Verstappen, was a racer, and you could say they're the best, but I don't think Jos was that good of a racer. Another name that you could throw into the mark are the Schumachers. So Michael Schumacher, arguably some people's GOAT, really, really good racer back in the day, mainly known for his time with Ferrari. He's got a son, Mick Schumacher, who raced for Haas last year or 2 years ago. Now, I think Mick, who, if I'm correct, is a reserve driver on Mercedes. But I really like Mick, and I think he can come back. But because he hasn't proven himself, I'm not going to put him there either. The name that I'm going to put it is actually the Andretti family. So it's Mario and Michael Andretti. Mario Andretti is actually the only driver to ever win the Daytona 500, the Indy 500, and a Formula One World Championship. And his son, Michael Andretti, won the 1991 IndyCar title. IndyCar is not the same as Formula One, but you still won a title in a really good league. So I think because both of them have proven to be champions, Mario and Michael Andretti are the best father-son duo in racing. Now moving over to baseball, and baseball was one of the harder ones. So the first name that popped in my head were the Holidays. Matt Holliday, who had a really, really good career with Colorado. I know he played a little bit in St. Louis as well. He played a bit all over, but Matt Holliday was a really good player for a really good time. Really good time, for a really long time. Now, he's got a bunch of sons, the first of which, Jackson Holliday of the Baltimore Orioles organization, is coming up. And I think Jackson Holliday can be a star in this league, as does a lot of other people. He hits the ball very, very well, defends very, very well. So the Holidays could take this over. And then the other name that jumped in my head, who I said, oh, these are going to be the ones, are the Griffeys. So Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey Sr. was a two-time World Series champion. He was a three-time All-Star. Really, really good season, career. And then Seattle drafted his son, and they played on the same team. So this is where I think it's the funnest father-son duo, that they actually played together. But Ken Griffey Jr. outshined his father. He was a 13-time All-Star, a 10-time Gold Glover, and the reason a lot of people got into baseball. I view him in a similar light as Allen Iverson to basketball. He really made a lot of things in baseball cool. He really, you know, that backwards hat style, I mean, I think that's his logo. And it's Ken Griffey, he's Ken the Kid, that backwards hat, he's still rocking the backwards hat, taking photos of sports games these days. Ken Griffey Jr. was my first favorite baseball player growing up, and the Griffeys really did it. But in my research, I did not realize that Barry Bonds' father, Bobby Bonds, was just as much of a masher as he was. So I've got to give it to the Bonds on this one in baseball. Both played for San Francisco, but Bonds was just an absolute menace during his time when he played. Bobby Bonds. And Barry Bonds, as we all know, hate him or love him for his steroids, Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame, because he is, from everything that I have heard and seen, the most feared hitter in all of baseball history. All of baseball history. I mean, just look up a couple of Barry Bonds stats. It's going to be a segment that I have in the future of just the most ridiculous records, and you're going to hear me say Barry Bonds' name a million times in that. Barry Bonds, the best hitter in baseball, and again, I'm going to say it here, he was the most feared hitter in baseball. I mean, if I'm correct, there were situations where there was bases loaded with him up to bat that they intentionally walked. So for those that don't know, bases loaded, if you intentionally walk the guy that's hitting, that means you are purposely letting a run score, because basically every person on the bases moves up a base, so the guy that's on third gets to come home. They would intentionally walk Bonds because they were more afraid that he would actually hit a home run, or just drive in more than the one run. They knew that Bonds was the hardest out in baseball history and would walk him in a bases-loaded situation. So to find out that his father was equally, I shouldn't say equally, but a dominant hitter in his time as well, it's got to be the Bonds family as the best father-son duo in baseball history. Now I'm moving on to basketball, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a name in here. It's one where a lot of the names that I knew growing up have their sons coming into it now, so this could change in the future. I know Boozer's got some really, really good sons coming into the basketball game. But I'm going to give it to the Currys on this one. Del Curry passed on his shooting to his sons, Seth and Steph Curry. And now Steph Curry is arguably the best shooter. In my eyes, he's the best shooter, so you could argue me on that one. But he is the best shooter of all time. His father was also a really, really good shooter with his time out there in Charlotte. Passed on his pims, but because of them, other ones that I wanted to put in there, I know the Barrys were really good. It was Rick and Brent Barry. I think that for the value that these people added to their franchises in terms of winning games and winning titles, Del Curry, along with Steph Curry, have done the most. And even Seth Curry has been a really good role player. But because I'm using one, I mean, it's like the Mannings. Archie had Eli and Peyton, but I'm really going to say Peyton was better, so it's Archie and Peyton. So like Del with Seth and Steph, I'm going to say it's Del and Steph as the best father-son pairing in basketball history. But I'm sure I'm forgetting a name. Please let me know. But it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen. Now, I also want to throw another fun one out there. So, father-son, Man O' War and War Admiral. Some of you might already know that names. They are horses. So, I'm getting into equestrian. Yes, they are athletes too. The jockeys do the some of the work, but the horses are the thoroughbred athletes of that sport. And Man O' War is arguably the greatest horse racing horse of all time. He is 20-1. Or was, rest in peace. But Man O' War is just an absolute thug, and I think the goat of horse racing from what I've heard. His son, War Admiral, had 21 wins. So upped his father by one, so he had 21 wins, including a 1937 Triple Crown. So I think that is the best. Now, in horse racing, there's a lot of lineage of kind of stallions that are passing on to the next one. But I think Man O' War and War Admiral kind of have the most successful lineage in horse racing industry. So I'm going to give it to them as the best father-son duo in equestrian history, as I actually think it's more to the horse than the jockey, and I don't know any father-son jockeys. Man O' War, War Admiral, you guys rock. Rest in peace. And thank you all for sitting through another episode of Roped In. I had a lot of fun recording this episode. I'm not going to tie up too much more of your time here, but I am going to let you guys know, as you heard in my intro, I am going to be getting into the video segment, so keep an eye out for my future YouTube and Instagram page. Also, just to kind of let you guys know a couple of things, not to dive too much into my family, but we're thinking about kind of expanding the Roper Empire, Roped In being part of it. So what I'm also going to be kind of really trying to get into is a website and a kind of a platform for myself. So all of these segments, you can kind of go to and check on certain things. When I do my top 10 rankings, you know, you can go to my page and check what the top 10s are. So keep an eye out for that as well. I'm not going to give myself a timetable on that one, because that one, I don't want to just rush and go too fast. I want to be able to do the right things. Now, my timetable is going to be, by the summer, I will be doing, at least I will have a video episode out there. How consistently it's going to be, I want to make it consistent, but I will have a video out by end of summer, if not summertime. And I will be having a website. I will be having a platform during the summer as well. But again, I want to get the right things. I don't want to kind of, pardon my language, but I'm not going to half-ass it and get you a bad product just to get it out there. I want to be able to still put something. Now, yes, I'm not going to wait and make it perfect. I know I'm going to fine-tune it as it goes. But as I mentioned in my intro, special shout-out Wilson. He's going to be helping me. So I will connect with you soon. Sorry to not connect with you this week, but I will be connecting with you. I just genuinely did not get into any camera things, so getting you to edit any video that I do not have did not help. But yes, I will be getting into the video segment. I will be getting into the online segment. I want to get out there. I want to be more in your face. I want to have more things. I want to build my empire. I want to take over the sports game. And as always, Roped In is here for you and wants you to have a wonderful day. So, Hakuna Matata.